It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So it's all for play for still?
I think so. Do you want to bet against us?
Welcome, everybody, to For the Love of Pomegranate podcast in a small little bit of a different setting. And yes, we have recruited somebody onto the podcast. We haven't really talked terms or numbers or contracts or anything like that, but we have the wonderful Martin O'Neill here, and we're hoping to convince him over the next 20 to 25 minutes or so to join the podcast full time. But Martin O'Neill, thank you so much for agreeing to come on. This is a real honor to chat to you today.
No, it's a pleasure. I see all the things and anything associated with Paul is fine by me.
Well, as I say, as people who listen to the podcast knows, he's a big, big figure in my household, always has been. And as I say, he's the man who the podcast is named after. But for today, we might just change it up to For the Love of Martin O'Neill for the next few minutes, because as you say, you do have myself and Paddy have a very big connection with a lot of your managerial career, obviously with Aston Villa through your time at Celtic, and then also with the Irish national team as well. So we're looking to pick your brains on that as well.
I've got something to tell you, but believe it or not, way back when I was a player, and probably obviously in maybe in the latter stages of my career, but I got an invitation, I think, up to Dublin one evening to present some prizes to some young people, so this particular prize I'm presenting to this young fellow. And obviously I asked the question, you know, what would you like to do with your life? He said, oh, I'd like to be a professional footballer. And of course I'm, you know, yeah, of course you do. I know, usually sort of semi-dismissive, although I wasn't semi-dismissive. But I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, well, let's see how it goes. And I said, well, all the very, very best. Yeah, it was Paul McGrath.
Oh, really?
It was Paul McGrath, honestly. And what a professional he became. So there you are.
Absolutely. That's an amazing story. Yeah, Martin absolutely didn't even tell us that beforehand. That's brilliant.
And I'm quite sure he was so young, he probably wouldn't have a clue about who this older footballer was at the time, anyway, that was presenting the prizes. You know, probably thought it was just another day out of school, I'm imagining. But it was Paul McGrath. I remember that distinctly.
Excellent.
You know, so he hadn't kicked a ball in English football at the time, you know, so he was making his way through. So
making his way through probably the St. Patrick's Athletic. Yeah. Yeah. And I suppose, look, there's, as I say, obviously you have a new book out at the moment, and we're all looking forward to getting stuck into it. It was released on the 10th of November. It's available from Pan and Macmillan Publishers. We will share the link for it in underneath here. It's getting rave reviews, Martin. I know that a lot of basically the excerpts and stuff like that have come out about it tell some great stories, and I'm sure that those excerpts will be filled in with a lot more context as well when we do get our hands in the book. So, guys, guys. The link will be in the YouTube notes here and in the podcast notes as well. But obviously, as we are decked out in Aston Villa gear, we are really, really thrilled to get to know a small bit about your Aston Villa life, or that time, a period in your life as with Aston Villa. It coincided with some really, really good times for the club, a bit of stability for the club, a bit of hope, which Aston Villa were crying out for at that period of time, coming off maybe, I suppose, some times of mediocrity. There was a sale to a rich American benefactor. It was after taking over the club. Things were looking up and there was money being pumped into the club. But they needed somebody to come and bring it all together. And Doug Ellis made the phone call to you, Martin. Talk to us a small bit about that. I've heard you speak about it in one or two other places. I've heard you speak a small bit about it on Talk Sport today, actually, as well. Talk to us a bit about that, though.
Well, Doug, yes. You will know, obviously, as being a big Villa fanatic, that times were difficult then, and particularly for Doug. You know, Doug had been talking for a number of years really about selling the football club. But I think that the fans had just really kind of voted with their feet, in the sense that the season tickets were really down. David O'Leary had just gone at the stage. They were looking for a new manager at the time. I'd been at Celtic the previous year and left Celtic, you know, with... then my wife was getting better from illness, and so a chance to get back into club management. So Doug took the opportunity, gave me a call, and I meet him at his house. Now, at that stage, I think that there was a lot of talk at that stage about Doug selling up. And in fairness to me, in my meeting with him, he told me that, you know, that this may well happen, that the only person he really felt that could take the club forward was, in fact, Mr. Lerner. And at the time, I, naturally, in terms of self-preservation, you're thinking, well, if Doug appoints me as manager and then Mr. Lerner steps in and wants somebody else, then it's going to be a really short stay. But in essence, the chance to meet Mr. Lerner beforehand was one that he set up himself and said to me that, listen, you do what you want. He said, I want to buy the football club. There's no complete guarantee. Doug might change his mind at the end of it all. He said, but if I do get it, whether it be in a 6 weeks' time or six months' time, he said, hopefully, he said, I want to try and keep you on as manager. And therefore, that was obviously encouraging for me. But Doug was the one that actually appointed me. And Doug, well, I know he was called Deadly Doug for a reason, because he's usually, I think the great Jimmy Greaves gave him that name, you know, Deadly Doug for deadly, sacking managers pretty quickly. But overall, it was my experience with Doug, although short, was really, really very, very interesting, I must admit. And there is actually a story in the book where we kind of clash early on over his paying of appearance money to Martin Lawson, who was only on the field for 3 or 4 minutes. But it's that's the way Doug ran the football club. And I suppose even the short meetings I had with him, you know, you saw a real genuine strength of character about this fella, that he didn't mind. He honestly did not mind the criticism. He was prepared to charge on regardless, and that's the way he was running with it, you know. So
he very much did it his own way.
He was some character, Doug, but I think Martin, you probably hold the record of the only manager never to be sacked or leave under Doug Ellis.
I'm quite sure I would have joined everyone else had I been there for a couple of months.
In Martin O'Neill's book, On Days Like These, My Life in Football, Martin speaks honestly about his decision to retire as a player and making the transition to manager. He recalls finding early success with Wycombe Wanderers, his move to the Premier League with Leicester City, talks about his years with Celtic, and also his time with Aston Villa, where he achieved 3 consecutive top 6 Premier League finishes. Also, Martin delves into his time managing the Republic of Ireland and working alongside his mercurial assistant, Roy Keane. Yeah, and you know, you mentioned there that Doug Ellis would have probably promoted you to the fan base from manager position if you'd stayed around there too long. I don't think that would have been the case at all. I think that you would have done just fine. But I think that first year, a lot of people focus on obviously the trip to Europe and things like that. I think that first year was a real moulding situation for Aston Villa Football Club, and I think you had to work with tools that you needed to get the best out of. Obviously, your first signing, your the only big money signing that you made before the start of the season was Stylian Petrov. And how important was Stylian Petrov to you to be able to try and maybe instill it? Somebody that you had at Celtic, somebody that was going to come in and maybe have words in the ears with people in the dressing room and say, hey, this is Martin O'Neill. This isn't somebody that you've met, you've played under before, and this is how he likes things done. Was that a really important? Was that, put it this way, was that a game, a deal breaker for you with regards to coming to the club?
No, you're right. There wasn't much money around, first of all. Doug, and I think then when Doug finally made his mind up to leave the football club, then the rest was relatively plain sailing in terms of getting the deal over the line. But in all honesty, it was Mr. Lerner who really funded Stylian Petrov. And we paid the money for him. As you mentioned it to me now, I honestly don't think that I signed Stylian, you know, just to step into the dressing room and tell the people, oh, listen, they know the manager we had at Celtic is a fine manager or something like this here. I don't think so. I really wanted him just to try and I think maybe improve the team. His debut, lads, was really, really fantastic. Played against West Ham, but he was simply sensational. And I thought, well, that's great. That's great news. Great news for myself. Great news for Stylian. But then Stylian, then after a while, lost his way a little bit. And in fact, I would have said that by the end of the season, you know, things weren't going so well with him at all. In fact, I had to pull him aside and think that maybe he wasn't going to hack it there at Villa Park. In fairness to the lad, as I knew Stylian had, the one great thing about him, he's got plenty of courage, really courage, both physical and obviously mental courage. And he said, no, I'll fight my way back into this team. And eventually he did do and became obviously a big, strong influence in the dressing room, but also very, very popular with the crowd. And it's only his cancer battle that forced him to obviously not just leave the football club, but leave football altogether from a playing viewpoint. So, no, the first year was one of those where some players you didn't feel were really good enough to play for Aston Villa, even at Premier League level. And one or two trying to get your own way and get a few players in. For instance, signed around about the January time, where took Ashley Young and big John Carew. Carew is a real handful. He makes you smile even now when you think about it. John was a very, very fine, strong footballer. That's when he had the notion of playing. Sometimes playing and John just didn't necessarily always go together, particularly if he'd had a reasonable couple of days down in London beforehand. I am joking. You had to cajole John into playing, you know. He would take
Martin, we know you're not joking. We know exactly what he was capable of.
His mother was still living in Norway, somewhere in Norway, and his mother used to be the sort of litmus test for John's fitness. For instance, when he would make a phone call back home, she would say, oh, John, I detect a sore throat there. Surely you're not thinking about playing on the Saturday, you know, with a sore throat. And John might come in to the doctor and me and say, well, you know, mother thinks I've got a really sore throat. Well, sorry, Mum, you are a professional footballer. You do play with sore throats, you know, that's part of the game. But when he did play and was really at it, he was a real handful, you know. Mm-hmm. But Ashley Young, great to see Ashley still at the football club now after the length of time he left and went to Manchester United and then to Italy. And now he's back. And Aston Villa is certainly part of his blood. But, you know, to bring him at the time, it was a big risk, really. He'd just been playing for Watford, and what all the things that I think he was capable of doing, he certainly produced in the Villa shirt.
He most certainly did. He was probably one of your better signings for sure. You made some great signings, and a lot of people forget that. And there was a lot of money made off the signings that you made as well when we eventually sold them on. Just going back to John Carew briefly, would he have been, maybe difficult is not the right word to use, but would he would have been the ones that you would have to put the arm around and coach the most in your time at Aston Villa?
John was that. He was actually a really, really, really good character. Unbelievably popular in the dressing room with the lads, and really obviously with the fans as well too. But you accepted John for all the things. You just wanted him to You wanted him to be at it all the time. And sometimes your cajoling or encouragement, you know, might fall on stony ground at times, you know, for John. But overall, he was genuinely terrific for us.
And moving, I suppose, from somebody like John Carew into players, I think that maybe, I don't know, you might tell us differently, that may not have needed as much cajoling to play. Now, myself and Paddy would often think that we might make a superb centre-half partnership, but I don't think we play as well as the likes of Martin Larsson and Olaf Melberg. They're obviously two massive names within Aston Villa Football Club. What you got out of Martin Larsson and obviously Olaf Melberg at the time that he was with the club was fantastic, and they've gone down as a legendary centre-half partnership. But how were they as men and as leaders of that team? Because they seemed like people that you wouldn't cross in the dressing room, that they seemed to be a bit of an enforcer types.
Larsson was really an incredible character in many aspects. When I came to the football club first, which was way back then in 2006, and I signed for the football club and went out to Germany immediately because they were playing. I signed on a Friday night, and they were playing a couple of pre-season games before they started the season, which was in a fortnight's time. And they were playing, and that was the first time that I would see Martin Larsson out there. And Martin was actually—he was not just running with a limp; he was actually walking with a limp. And I thought, "What is this? Is it, you know, what's this all about?" But Martin said to me, "Oh, don't worry too much about this." He said, "This will disappear." And he said, "And I can't play any more than one game per week." I thought to myself, "We'd be lucky if he played one game a year." But he said, no, but soon he said, I will be able to play two games a week if that's the case. Well, I have to say, I mean, I kind of left it to him. The one thing about Martin Larsson was this, that having been in Italy for some time, and particularly having the number of injuries that he had, Martin Larsson was incredibly particular about his training and what he had to do, his fitness regime. He had to do so much. If you ask Martin Larsson to do, let's say 100 trolley pulls, Martin Larsson would not stop at 99. He would do the 100. You just know that. You could leave him to it. And he was very, very much like Paul McGrath in this sense. Yeah. You said to Martin, you can't train all week. You couldn't train all week. But on the Friday, he would come out and join us in five-a-side. Martin's probably the worst five-a-side player you've ever seen. But it didn't matter. As long as he was getting some fresh air and out there away from the gymnasium where he was doing all his work, and then come Friday, he would do this five-a-sides where he would be particularly poor. But in the Saturday, he was just immense for us, absolutely immense. You can see him just particularly in the opposition box as well too, where you think he would just throw himself into corner kicks and free kicks. He was terrific for us.
Yeah, and with Olaf, obviously he made the difficult decision to leave Aston Villa. I think it was on your watch, if I'm not mistaken.
You were there, absolutely. Yes,
conversations around that, I presume, were difficult.
Yeah, I think that Olaf thought then that maybe it was a chance for pastures new as much as anything else at the time, and perhaps, you know, I thought that he might have been staying along, but you're never exactly sure what might be in players' minds. But he had this opportunity to let his contract run through and then head off. So he did that. But I know, as you say, he did excellently for Aston Villa during my time, and obviously he was there before I arrived.
Yeah. And but he didn't give you any one of those jerseys that he got printed out, did he? Everyone else got one.
I think by the time he'd handed them out, they'd all gone.
Good. Martin, can I ask you two questions about one is about a transfer that did happen, and one is another one. And look, as I say, one is I want to try and dispel a rumor. You probably may know what that second one is, but the first one is, how does Mustafa Salifu come across a manager's desk? Not to say that he was an incredibly poor player or anything like that. I'm not going down that route. But a player that's playing in the Swiss second division on transfer deadline day, and he was signed. And I think I remember actually watching Sky Sports News, and they cut back to the studio after it was announced that Mustafa Salifu had signed. And you just saw a bit of blank faces on people's on the TV. They were like, who the hell is this guy? And but how does that happen, I suppose?
Well, okay. It can happen. And he was my signing, absolutely. Yeah. And it wasn't as if to say that we were just picking someone up there from the bus stop.
Of course.
He didn't cost very much money. We were trying to build a bit of a squad. And sometimes for not that much money, you might take a risk on someone that you think might have the ability to come through. And so I'd watch a lot of them playing, obviously with the aid of technology and stuff like this here. And so fine. And for very little at the stage where I thought, well, listen here, do you know what? He looks every bit as technically good as some of the younger players we have there at the time. Mm-hmm. And if you're asking them to come through, he might be that sort of bridge where he's a little bit older, might be able to come through, particularly with us playing in European football and not wanting all the time to play the likes of James Milner and Stuart Downing and things like this here. But it wasn't that Sally Fu didn't cost too much money. He definitely had ability. Mm-hmm. He could actually deal with the ball, and it was nice. And in training sessions, you thought, oh, listen, he's actually going to be really, really worth it. But at the end of it all, you know, as I said to you, it's not as if it was costing me £15 million and throwing it down the drain. He was one of those that I thought that could fill in when some of the players couldn't play. And as you well know, mm-hmm. Imagine, I did go to the well with the same players so often. Even Alex Ferguson said to me, he said, I don't know how you play those players all the time. And I did do, because those were the players I trusted. Mm-hmm. And when the week before we played Manchester United in the League Cup final, even James Milner came to me. And if James is coming saying he's feeling a little bit tired and maybe miss out for a week, then you might have a problem, because James was never tired. And so it was really, in essence, to try and just keep the squad up more than anything else. And hopefully that we would still be maybe in the latter stages of European competition. Yeah. And perhaps maybe the likes of Sally Fu could have helped along the way.
Yeah. I've got to ask you about this. I think it seems to be this internet rumor that goes around the place the whole time that Aston Villa were offered Falcao at some stage. Mm. I don't know whether you could confirm or deny that at any stage. And we don't know what would have happened, but it always gets thrown about whenever the whole Aston Villa signed Emil Heskey thing comes into play. And Emil Heskey, as we know, scored, I think it was on his debut for Portsmouth, and it was an absolute banger. It was some sort of a half volley. But whenever that gets mentioned, Radamel Falcao's name comes up.
Mm. Well, I have to tell you this, in all honesty, I do not remember it. You think you would do.
You
I do not remember that at all. There are, as you would well know, you can imagine during the course of the season, but particularly maybe the month leading up to the transfer deadline or something like this here, that would be players thrown at you from agents all over the place.
Yes. Yeah.
And some agent may have perpetuated this story. I do not remember Falcao being offered to me. I absolutely do not remember that at all. And that's really genuine. And if someone says, oh, I put it in front of them, I think that might be to bolster their own particular time, you know. So, I mean, you know, the agents, you know, you can imagine. But the Falcao thing, I do not remember one jot of it. And my memory is relatively good. I mean, it does fade at times, mm-hmm. and sometimes it's selective, as most of us have. But overall, I do not remember Falcao and or me turning Falcao down as a player.
Well, there you go. As I say, he would, if he was somebody that came across your desk, he'd definitely be someone, as you say, that you would have looked up and you would have done research on.
You know what? I think that it might have attracted attention. Do you not think of it?
maybe considering his goal scoring record. Yeah,
I know. Absolutely.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
for sure. And,
Martin, yeah. You mentioned the briefly
also,
there about it.
Sorry, Penny.
You mentioned briefly there about the League Cup final. It's something that really irks me over the years when you mention people's name. But I'm gonna throw a name at you now and give you 30 seconds to discuss Mr. Phil Dowd.
Oh, honestly, you know what is, you talk about it, you talk about career changing moments. Myself and Mr. Lernan perhaps weren't getting on the best at their best at that time, and that there, if we had put the League Cup together, won the League Cup that day, which I know that Sir Alex Ferguson is one of the greatest managers ever been in the game. And no question about it. And sometimes he could win games with nine players. But what with us, with the ability that we had in the team, with the running power that we had in the side that day, we could have won that game. We take the lead. They have a man sent off. Vidic has left. So it means they have to replace him, you know. And so they'll maybe take maybe somebody off the field at the time, a forward player. We have a great chance of winning the game. And Phil Dowd makes up the rules as he goes along, you know. And that was just, he just... Crazy, absolutely crazy. And
do you believe if Richard Dunn did that to Michael Owen, he would have stayed on the pitch?
No, absolutely not. Not at all. This is the whole point. And I feel sometimes, and I obviously it's only in my mind, that I felt as if when he was making the decision at the time to give the penalty and then deliberating over what they're sending off, I'm sure that he probably saw a grizzled Sir Alex Ferguson staring at his back and saying, don't you dare, you know. But listen, and it was, you know, a decision he made up of his own volition, and it just wasn't in the rules at the time. And I possibly understand the fact that, that he might have thought first minute of the game, does this spoil the enjoyment for fans watching the game? But nothing to do with that. That's not his decision. No, it's just his decision just to abide by the rules. Mm-hmm. And I honestly think that we would have won. We would have been and a trophy in the board, which is the most important thing. And Mr. Lern and I maybe patching up some differences. You know?
And that's exactly it. Like, it's a sliding doors moment between, you at this point, you would have been the last Aston Villa manager to win a cup. You know, if things stayed as they were, who knows? You might have gone on to Champions League football from then on. Who knows what? If we put the current owners back to 2010 and you in charge, I would just love to see how things panned out. But unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. Your book is called On Days Like These, and I think you know it's a title of a book that resonates with me, because football is about days and special days. And you know, you as a man probably don't realize, you know, the special days that you brought. People will always talk about, you know, how it ended and how it walked away. But the days that brought through that Aston Villa 4 years was absolutely incredible. There were some amazing performances. Unfortunately for me, I had a young child at the time. I couldn't get over it too often. I'm a season ticket holder now and go very often. Sometimes have to sit through some awful drivel. And I wish I had the chance to sit through more days. I was lucky enough to go to a lot of Celtic games while you were there. I went to Anfield to see that mesmerizing game.
Did you? Oh, great.
Absolutely. I never got to Seville because it was a couple of weeks before I got married. But I went to Anfield.
Priorities.
I know. Yeah, made a mess of that one. I didn't see that one coming. But, you know, on days like these, that day in Anfield, where you could sit in the stadium with a Celtic shirt on in the middle of all the Liverpool crowd, the atmosphere that night was absolutely spine tingling. Do you remember much of it?
Oh, I absolutely do. Yes, you're just going back there before I talk about that there to Aston Villa days. You know what you talk about? Ending. Do you know what? If it to do it over again, I just patch up differences with Mr. Lerner, honestly, and stay put. You know, club was great, and I should have dealt with it better in terms of my ending. Absolutely, should have dealt with it. Should have just got on with the things, accepted what was coming, and say, well, okay, yeah, let's go for it. Desperately try and get into the Champions League. That was like my real ambition for the football club. And we fell short two successive years, really, where we're very, very close. And when I took the team to Russia and changed the side around, and then And then coming back to what's all this about, you know?
Yeah.
And when we were in Russia, which was to do with us being in the last 32 of the competition, it wasn't really as if we were in the last 8 or something like that. So I was desperately trying to push, and really with Sir Alex Ferguson's words echoing in my mind, you know, you're pushing the team to the well. So some of the players just needed resting up for the games ahead. We had about another 12 games left in the league. And our next game after the Russia event in Moscow was Stoke City and Glenn Whelan. Glenn scores a goal. And Stoke City draw with us when we're 2-0 up with about 8 minutes to go. And Glenn, I keep telling Glenn, I've told him umpteen times, he never scores a goal. He never gets a goal. No, and then suddenly he should score against us. But it was great. Anyway, such is life.
It wasn't the only time that Glenn Whelan started the downfall of an Aston Villa manager. He missed a 96th minute penalty to cost Steve Bruce's job as well.
Fine. That's absolutely right. Absolutely. But, gosh, so, there we go. Well, that's even greater consequences than that.
Yeah.
But, you're talking about the Liverpool, the atmosphere at Anfield was fantastic, matched only by the atmosphere at Celtic when we played them in the first leg. But for us to go and win the game was great news. Great news for Scottish football as well, too, because, you know, we're always being compared unfavourably with England. And quite rightly so, because there's not the same money in the game. Celtic and Rangers seem to stand alone, and the other teams seem to in the league seem to fall by the wayside a little bit in terms of money, and then all you need is like Celtic and Rangers not to have had the best competitions in the Champions League this year for people to throw disparaging remarks up again. So that's very obvious, and it was something that even then, even though I felt that the Scottish League was much stronger with Aberdeen and Dundee and Dundee United being stronger mostly than the teams that they are now today, you still have to play those games and then step up to European football midweek. And that was what I was really pleasing about the team that I had at Celtic. We could do that. We could step up into the big leagues, you know, and compete well. We got 9 points in the first time that we were ever in the Champions League. 9 points and didn't get through to the knockout stages. Really disappointing. Then Bobo Baldi handles the ball against Lyon in the last minute of the game. Otherwise, we're through. Oh, you know what? If I'd been big enough, I could have dealt with him. You know.
There's not many men in this world big enough to deal with Bobo Baldi.
Oh, you're dead right.
Bobo was a unit for sure. Paddy has actually been to see a lot of great games that you've managed in as well. He was in Lille for that famous day, obviously turning our attention to the Irish game. He was in Lille in that day where we once again did our party trick of beating Italy in a big tournament.
Brilliant, Paddy. You've been to a few of the games. It's really good. Lille was really special. You know, Robbie Brady's heading in. Yes. He's gone as brave as a lion. He doesn't care what's going to be in front of him, and he's gone there and it's going to head that ball into the net. Just absolutely fantastic moment, really fantastic. Yeah. There was me still cursing Wes Houlihan for missing a center about 35 seconds before that. And I think if I get anywhere near him in this dressing room, he floats the one in, and then comes Robbie to head it into the net. Oh, listen, really, really lovely moments, I must admit. Yeah,
absolutely. And I had my 11-year-old son with me that day, and you know, I was lucky enough that my father brought me up on football, and it's so important that people remember what managers did, which is great that you can come on and tell your story to everybody that will listen, because you know, a guy like you deserves to have a book written, and I love the fact that you've written this book yourself. Because, I'm looking forward to this book arriving in the post to read it and hand it on to my son for him to read it about those halcyon days at Celtic, to read back on that journey through France that he went on, which was absolutely mind-blowing and incredible. And, you know, to stand there and feel his heart beating out of his chest with 90 minutes on the clock was absolutely nothing like it. And I actually feel sorry for people that aren't football people, because, you know, it's experiences like that that stay with you till the day you die.
Yeah. And
really, thank you.
Martin, I'd just like to say my adoption papers to become Paddy's son. They're in the process of being cleared off at the moment. Actually, yeah. So I wish that was the case.
Brilliant.
Martin, I did bump into you a couple of times. The very first time I met you, you probably ran away from me. It was the day Tommy Johnson scored the goal to win the league against, I think it was St. Mirren.
Yep.
And I was slightly inebriated by the time I bumped into you at about 10 o'clock that night.
Yeah. Oh, down in the theater. I'm brilliant. Bro, fantastic. Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, listen, from me, just to win the league there with Tommy scoring the goal as well, too. So,
another big hero for Aston Villa, too.
Yes. Yeah.
Tommy did. Absolutely. Funnily enough, I'm going over at the end of the month to present some prizes in Belfast. He's working now. He's doing some coaching, and some of the young coaches are getting their badges as well too. So I'm just doing a little presentation with him. So it'll be nice to see him again for a while. Absolutely. So Tommy, genuinely lovely lad, really lovely lad. He says that why did I sign Chris Sutton? I said, Tommy, well, honestly, with respect, I said, you weren't going to be partnering Henrik Larsson for 2 minute games. No. I jokingly said to him, we need to win some of these games, you know, so that's why. But he was he really fine, Tommy. Fine, really, really good lad.
Mark, I know really, we're really conscious that we're taking up a lot of your time. So I have a $6 million question for you that everybody wants to know. Mm-hmm. You may or may not be able to answer, but we're going to ask it anyway.
Well,
what happened with Jack Grealish and why didn't he declare for Ireland?
Right. OK, really, do you know what? You can talk to your blue in the face with these things, but the answer is incredibly simple, really simple. Jack Grealish wanted to play for England. Really did, and no amount of cajoling or encouragement was going to change his mind. And here's the point, Paddy, that Jack was born in England. So I think, you know, the first thing that you should think about that. But Jack's dad was also born in England. So, you know, Jack, while he loved his time playing for the Republic of Ireland, it's at youth team level and things like this here, that was all the minute that he was going to be good enough. And remember, some of these games he was playing, maybe he was not really making much of an impact at Aston Villa as a kid at the time. But somewhere along the way, this lad had the talent. You just knew it was going to shine through. And so Jack Grealish wanted to sign for the country of his birth. It really, really as simple as that there. And to dissuade him of that in many aspects wouldn't really have been right. All her encouragement under the sun wasn't going to change Jack's mind. And interestingly, where I was harangued over Declan Rice, that I played Declan Rice three times in the seniors. Three times. And Declan Rice, one particular game he played a 10-yard ball once. This is honestly, lads, he played a 10-yard ball that no one else on our side would have seen. He played the 10-yard ball, and it was a terrific 10-yard ball because it cut the opposition down, and you could see even there at a young age that this lad had the talent, you know, had definite talent to play. Whether he was going to make a central midfield player, which I always thought he would do. Sometimes I think that West Ham in his days there were thinking even he might have made a centre half. I think he could have played in any of these positions. But certainly those three games I played him in, and they're all friendly matches. So we really wanted to see it. But again, he's a decision to make. And while his dad was, and I went round to their house, while their dad was very enthusiastic about Ireland for it, the decision is finally up to Declan's. Mm. And Declan felt, and I think his agent was strongly pushing for him. Did Declan see the career that he was having in front of him at the time? Perhaps not. Did he see an English career beckoning? Whereas maybe the Ireland thing, the chances are playing in a World Cup were going to be greater with playing for England, as it's been proved. So, Declan Rice wanted to play for England. It was really, really as simple as that. Much as he had sympathy and empathy for his time in Ireland, which was nice, great, but he played those games, and that's what he wanted to do. So the similar situation to the two of them. And I don't think you're right to try and coerce somebody, encourage them, yes, if that's the case, but the decision is eventually up to them.
So they weren't locked into a room with Roy Keane for 48 hours and fed water and bread. No, you didn't try that tactic because it might have worked, man.
We didn't. Yeah. I think the unchaining of the two of them was the difficult part, you know. So, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. That was it. But Martin, thank you so much. We're massively over time, but you've given some really great insight into an awful lot of questions, and an awful lot of different parts of both Aston Villa, Celtic, and the Irish national team there as well. So really, really appreciate your time.
Absolutely, no, it's a delight to talk to you. And when I finish this, I'm going to go back and scratch my head and put myself into a room, towel over my head in a dark room and say, Falcao, Falcao, are you sure about this?
Ask Ian Story Moore. Ian, did it ever come across the table?
Very, very good point. Very good point. And great. Well done, because then I can blame him if it did come out. No, brilliant. No problem.
Excellent. Right. Well, everybody, as I say, Martin's book is out on Pan Macmillan. You'll be able to get it on the link here in the podcast notes or under the YouTube notes as well. We will have it up on our Twitter as well. As I say, you've gotten a few snippets of the stories there, but if you want the real stuff, you got to buy the book. And I'm sure it's going to be a massive stocking filler for this Christmas as well. But once again, Martin, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for your time at Aston Villa, and thank you so much for your time at the Irish national team as well. We look forward to seeing what the future holds for you. Have you got any punditry gigs for the World Cup?
I was going to be working. I had a chance to go and work for a group called Astro, A-S-T-R-O, yes. Astro TV, but they were out in Kuala Lumpur, and they were very, very pleasant people, really lovely to work with, really genuinely worked out, and I was going to be covering quarterfinal, semi-final and final for the World Cup. My wife, who was going to come with me, had to have certain injections and things that you see that didn't really work out, and so yeah. I've had to decline. But overall, it's they're really super group to work with. I must admit, and I do some work with them during the course of the season. So that was it. So I'll be watching most of the football from the comfort of a living room.
Excellent. Put your feet up.
With a firelight, and I hope, Martin.
Yeah, absolutely.
We wish you many more happy years, and wish you the best of luck with the book. And again,
that's very kind of you. Thank you
so much for your time, and thank you more than anything. Thank you so much for memories and on days like these.
Thank you very much. Really nice of you. Thanks again. Excellent. All right. Cheerio. See you soon.
So thanks everybody for watching the podcast. You can catch us on any of our social media platforms. We'll be back with more podcasts. But in the interim, watch out for Martin's book, and please give it a look. So until next time, stay safe, stay healthy, and all that's left to say is up the Villa.
Up the Villa.
Up the Villa.
Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.